unopened casebook of Sherlock Holmes. Six extraordinary adventures written by John Taylor. With Simon Callow as Sherlock Holmes and Nicky Hansen as Dr. John Watson. The second adventure, The Horror in Hanging Wood.
I think I've never been launched so unexpectedly into a bleak and baffling mystery as on that bitterly cold February morning when, with the city still in darkness, Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard got Sherlock Holmes and myself out of bed at our Baker Street lodgings and asked us to accompany him on a journey to assist in police business. A four-wheeled carriage hurried us out of London to the village of Charlton and into nearby Hanging Wood, where the white fires of police lanterns winked at us through the trees. When we stopped, it was beside a frozen ditch where a tarpaulin had been drawn over a man-shaped heap.
This is what you brought us to see?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. This fellow was killed sometime during the night. A robbery, I'm sure. There he is. What do you think, Doctor?
Well, without closer examination, I can only state the obvious. Most ferocious attack. Face battered out of all recognition. Jaw twisted. Left arm broken at the shoulder, almost wrenched off.
If it was robbery, Lestrade, it was a brutal one.
Well, I suppose the chap resisted and the villain got spiteful. Well, there's some nasty characters abroad, which is why I've asked you here. You know the methods of more of London's villains than any of us. Now, I want you to identify the author of this bit of handiwork, or at least provide me with a couple of likely names to add to my list.
Yes, I'm not certain why you think this man was robbed.
Why? He looks robbed. No valuables on him. No wallet, no change, no watch. Only a hole in the waistcoat where it was ripped out. And no ring, just a red mark where it circled the finger.
I'm sorry, Lestrade, I can only say I know of no thief who would mutilate his victims in such a way.
But violently...
None who would do this.
Then, Mr. Holmes, I thank you for your assistance. I shall have my driver return you to London at once.
Inspector Lestrade.
Oh, excuse me, gentlemen. Yes, what is it, Chaplin?
I thought you ought to know, sir. There's someone else who heard the noises.
Never mind about the noises. Any concrete evidence?
Oh, well, not yet, sir. Not what you'd call clues.
Then I suggest you get out there and look for some.
Yes, sir.
Just a minute. Constable, what were these noises you referred to? Surely, Lestrade, you'll permit me at least to satisfy my curiosity.
All right, Mr. Holmes. Chaplin, you better tell him.
Right you are, Inspector. Well, sir, about 2 o'clock this morning, someone came to the police station in the village to say they'd heard noises in the wood. Roaring and screaming and the like. We've been having reports like that since about last October. And normally, I don't take much notice. It's usually foxes. But this time, they swore they heard human screams as well. And since the locals think something unnatural lives here...
Yes, thank you, Chaplin. You will understand, gentlemen, why I prefer not to be waylaid by such nonsense.
But if there were noises...
A thief attacks a man. The man shouts for help. The thief sets about the man with a bludgeon. The man pleads and screams and wails. Of course there were noises. Noises in such circumstances are natural.
Yet it is a poor professional thief who wakes up half the neighbourhood.
Am I to take it then, Mr. Holmes, that you go along with the local legend lovers on this one? That it was some unspeakable thing which did for this man? Old Clootie? Horn Toes, Jack Blackheart, the Bogle Wump.
Round here, they just call it the Horror.
Round here, Chaplin, they are superstitious bumpkins. Now, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, we must proceed with our search of the woods. Now, thank you for coming out so early. My driver over there will take you back to the comfort of your lodgings. If you will excuse us.
Well, having dragged us out here, he suddenly seems in a hurry to be rid of us.
Yes, Lestrade is holding something back, evidently. I think, however, that we'll take a closer look at this body before we go.
Formidable strength to wrench a man's arm half off. And the blow to his face must have been colossal. What sort of creature would tear human flesh apart like that as if it were just paper chains?
The work of a thief? I doubt it.
What do you think, Holmes?
I don't know, but at least the unfortunate fellow's hands tell us something.
They do?
You do not see it?
I will...
But come, look at them. Look. Describe what you see.
Well... The skin on the fingertips on the left hand is calloused and hard, and there is a fresh scar at the root of the thumb, a bite mark, perhaps. The right hand has fresh blisters. Interestingly, they seem to be a sort of mirror of the calluses on the left hand around the pads of the fingers.
Excellent. Go on.
Well, there's some red and black staining on the cuff of the jacket, ink or paint, I should expect, and, well, that's about it.
That's enough.
Enough?
To identify him. We know quite a good deal about him now, that he was a ledger clerk, that he was ambidextrous, and that he was an amateur fiddler who recently resumed playing after a break of some weeks. That gets us off to a good start.
You deduced all that from the fellow's hands?
Oh, that was difficult at all. It's the overcoat that has me baffled. Look, do you see all these crude rips and tears? And there, just here, curiously, a gap where a triangular piece of lining has been carefully snipped away.
It's all quite obscure to me.
We shall place an advertisement today, my friend, in all the London newspapers. I think we have a fair chance of finding the identity of this poor fellow. But first to Baker Street and a decent breakfast, where I will explain everything, and we'll see that I've not been so very clever after all. Yes, I think this will do. See what you think of this.
Watson.
We do know a ledger clerk who is ambidextrous, that is, can use both hands equally, an amateur fiddle player, and one who has been missing from home since yesterday, or who failed to turn up at his place of work today. Contact Sherlock Holmes at the address. What do you think, Doctor?
Well, I hope you mean to tell me now how you arrived at this description merely from an examination of the fellow's hands.
Well, if you wish, though, I dare say you will only end up by exclaiming how simple it all is. Let's begin with the easiest part. That hard skin upon the left fingertips. Now, look at my own hand, you see? Calluses in exactly the same place. It comes from pressing down the strings. Like me, the murdered man played the violin. Yet there were fresh blisters on the fingers of the other hand. Well, then, he had swapped over and started to play with the other hand. And why? Almost certainly because of the wound on his thumb that left that bite-shaped scar.
Yet that does not prove he was ambidextrous, not if he swapped hands because of an injury.
Ah, but he wrote with his left hand.
How do you know that?
Remember those ink stains on the cup? When a right-handed person writes, his writing trails behind the moving hand. But a left-handed person has to move his arm to follow the writing. If the ink is wet, his cuff may well mop up some of the ink as it follows the furrow of the pen. Now, if he wrote with his left hand, but played the fiddle with his right, he was ambidextrous by definition.
And a ledger clerk.
Red and black ink, Watson. The red and black stains are about the same size, which suggests that he used red and black in roughly equal quantities, as people do when they're compiling budgets and accounts. Black for credit, red for debit.
Well, I never. As you say, simple.
It always is, Watson, once the brain work has been done. Now, let's get this advertisement off to the papers.
The advertisement was an almost immediate and dramatic success. Later that same evening, a messenger delivered to our lodgings a letter which said simply, "Dear sir, I know your man. Visit this evening if you wish." That the address was in Charlton, close by the scene of the murder, was all the encouragement we needed to take up the invitation at once, and soon a cab was delivering us to a house in Church Lane. So it was that we came to the pleasant home of Mr. Martin Sharpless, where it soon became clear to us all that it had been his lodger, a Joseph Beard, whose battered body had been found that very morning, dead in Hanging Wood.
So, Mr. Holmes, this was his room. Hard to believe he'll never return to it. As you see, it's small, but quite comfortable. You see his likeness there in that photograph on the chest of drawers with, I presume, his mother.
I'm certain that's our man. Now, if I may trouble you with some questions, Mr. Sharpless, when did you last see your lodger?
Yesterday evening. He's employed at the... was employed, I mean, at the Loan and Discount Company. A secretive sort of fellow, hardly ever wanted to talk. Last night he sat in his room, as usual, playing that confounded fiddle. I must admit I was quite relieved just before Christmas when he had the accident that stopped him playing.
Ah, yes, the hand injury. Do you know how he came by it? It looks like a bite mark.
Yeah, possibly, though I permit no animals to be kept here. All I know is the bandage prevented his playing that violin for a few blissful weeks.
This is the violin?
That an old thing, isn't it?
Gloriously out of tune. May we look in the cupboards and drawers?
Yeah, of course.
Are these all his possessions?
I believe so. He didn't seem to have many interests. I believe he did some reading.
Yes. Ah, there's a book here belonging to Agnew's Penny Library. Tooth and Talon. Appears to be entirely about cockfighting. It is possible, though a slow process, to harden the beak with the glycerin solution described at the end of this page. The cock's beak, when hard, can be sharpened to a point using a razor or a sharp trimming knife, making it a formidable weapon against other birds. How disgusting.
You know whether Mr. Joseph Beard was given to attending such entertainments, Mr. Sharpless?
Not so far as I know. You're thinking that's how he might have acquired that wound on his hand, which you said, Doctor, resembled a bite.
You have a quick mind, Mr. Sharpless.
Well, I am a keen follower of your methods, Mr. Holmes. In fact, I was wondering whether you think there might be some connection between my lodger's death and that other business in Hanging Wood last year.
Last year?
You did not hear of it? Of course, it never made the papers. It was late October. I was taking an early morning walk through the wood and found a large section roped off. There were policemen, and it looked as if they were clearing up after some rather gruesome crime.
Watson, it is exactly as I suspected. Lestrade has been hiding things from us. Why was he so determined this was a case of robbery? Because it is more convenient to believe in a homicidal thief than in some monster with an appetite for human blood. Yet a monster becomes more and more the likelier possibility.
But what sort of monster?
I don't know. I shall not find out as long as Lestrade is holding back. I want you to go and see him, Watson. Afraid of publicity, is he? He would be. Monsters in the wood make the police appear somewhat leaden-footed. Well, then, make it clear to him that unless he tells us all he can about this business, he will find himself with more publicity than Mr. Barnum's travelling circus. In the meantime, Mr. Sharpless, your interest in detective work may be useful.
I should feel privileged to help, if I can.
I should like you to use your knowledge of the neighbourhood to find out what you can about any blood sports, dogfights, cockfights, and the like, which are conducted in the area, and see if anyone involved recognises Joseph Beard from his photograph. Let us know if you have any success. Now, Watson, it is getting late and we must go. You to see Lestrade, and I to my researches. Watson. You look cold.
I am cold. What is more, I've had a most unpleasant evening.
Lestrade was difficult?
The man's an oaf. Rude, overweening, and stubborn. Besides which, the stove in his office was unlit, and I was not favoured with so much as a cup of tea. You have had a pleasant evening by the fire here, I trust?
Now, Watson, it was necessary for me to read this book on cockfighting, which you found among Beard's possessions. Eh? Grim stuff it is. What pleasure can people get from watching two poor, dumb creatures tearing each other to pieces? But tell me, was Lestrade compliant?
Once I'd threatened him, he grudgingly answered my questions.
Excellent. Here. A glass of this will give a boost to your blood. Mm. Now sit down, my dear fellow, and tell me.
Mm. Oh, that is good. Well, you'll find this fascinating, Holmes, I think. There had indeed been another incident like the one on Monday. In late October, a body, torn and battered like Joseph Beard's, was found in hanging wood. That of Jasper Adams, a Charlton gamekeeper. I cajoled Lestrade into letting me see those of the dead man's possessions which had been found upon or near his person, and most extraordinary it turned out to be.
Well, go on.
His overcoat. When I looked inside, I found that just as with Beard's coat, a small, neat triangle of cloth had been snipped out of the lining.
Well, anything else?
One small thing. Jasper Adams, like Joseph Beard, was a member of Agnew's Penny Library. Not a great coincidence, since they lived in the same neighbourhood, but interesting.
My dear friend, you've done very well. Why so despondent?
Because it is all useless. Lestrade has now arrested a man.
What?
One Harry Bannister, a known local criminal. Lestrade told me that we should now drop the business as it is concluded.
On the contrary, he has almost certainly arrested an innocent man. First thing tomorrow, Watson, we shall visit this Penny Library. Drop the business? We'll see about that.
First thing next morning, we made our way back to Charlton Village and to Agnew's Penny Library. The proprietress, Miss Agnew herself, watched from a glass cubicle while her clients browsed the bookshelves in strict silence.
Are you intending to join the library?
Well, I'm considering...
Please, lower your voice. People are reading.
Yes, I am considering it, and my colleague, the gentleman looking at the magazines, is interested too.
1 penny per week per book is the rate.
Mm-hmm.
There is, of course, a deposit to pay.
No.
Is there anything else you need to know?
Well, I wonder if you might take a look before we make a decision.
Yes, that is in order. But you must leave your top coats here. A strict rule of the establishment. Too many books disappear under top coats.
Oh, yes, of course.
An awesome woman.
Indeed. What have you found?
I thought I'd see if there was anything on animal combat. There are several, in fact. This one, for example, on dog fighting with pictures.
Holmes, this is quite repugnant. Look, this one has torn the other shreds.
Appalling savagery.
I suppose it is just sport to some.
Not to the dogs, I'll wager. Miss Agnew, the librarian, is watching us like a hawk. Probably thinks I mean to pocket the book. There, I'll put it back. Let us collect our coats and return to Baker Street.
Have we discovered something then?
Not a great deal, Watson, I think.
We've come all this way for nothing.
Well, the train journey made a change, I suppose, but do not despair, my friend. We will get to the bottom of this thing yet. Thank you.
Well, frankly, I don't see any sense in it, Holmes. Two men, on different occasions, hideously murdered in Hanging Wood. They don't know the same people and seem to have nothing in common except that they live in Charlton, belong to the same Penny Library, and have topcoats with a triangle of cloth missing from the lining.
Yes, but that they were killed with such violence, such fury. That is what Lestrade has failed to see. There is revenge of some sort in this.
But things were stolen. The pocket watch, the ring.
Items which might have helped identify the victims. The fear being that identification of the victims would lead to the killer.
Hmm. What are you doing, Holmes?
Oh, sorry. Forgive me. But I'm just pulling these hairs from your clothing. Very coarse, are they not? I noticed a similar one upon the dress of Miss Agnew at the library.
Then I must have picked them up there.
Watson! Good heavens! I must go out. If I hurry, I may just catch Otto Pfeiffer at the Zoological Institute.
Yes,
I shall be as quick as I can, but expect me late.
But Holmes, you've left your pipe burning.
Dr. Watson.
Mr. Sharpless.
Your housekeeper said I might come up, although it's late, because I think I have some information. Is Mr. Holmes here?
Out, I'm afraid.
Oh.
You may confide in me if you wish. Holmes might be late.
Yes, of course. Doctor, you recall that he asked me to inquire around Charlton about blood sports.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there has been dogfighting in Charlton, but never in the woods, which apparently would draw too much attention. More likely to happen in the cellar of a public house or down at the wharf.
Mm.
At any rate, Joseph Beard, my tenant, did go to such events. In fact, he was bitten on the hand by a dog just before Christmas. That scar, of course. Well, that made me think I should find out more. So I went to Agnew's Penny Library and came upon this. Gainsborough's Guide to Fighting Dogs. It is not very pleasant.
I can imagine.
However, it did not help me much as... Oh!
You found something?
I... Doctor, what time is it?
8:30.
Forgive me. I must return to Charlton immediately.
But what is it?
I cannot say. It is most confusing. I must get home and collect a lantern, and I have to be there by 11, you see. I'm sorry. I'll explain later. I mean, tomorrow.
But, Mr. Sharpless, if you could wait for Holmes... But I couldn't stop him, Holmes.
I see. And you think it was the piece of paper he found in that library book which sent him off on his errand?
I'm certain. As soon as he read what was written upon it, he was burning to go.
First he had to fetch a lantern. Watson, our overcoats.
We're going out?
Very likely, but first I wish to check whether... By the devil! And yours, Watson?
There! A triangle of the lining, cut out. But who would have done it?
Only one person could have done it. Miss Agnew, while we looked at the books in her library.
Do you know why?
I fear so, and if I'm right, we must get to Hanging Wood as fast as we ever travelled.
Oh.
Hello? Is anyone here? I'm a friend. I have an invitation. Do you hear me? I'm a local man with an invitation. Quite legitimate.
Dear God.
Move faster if we had more light.
Shall I open the dark lantern wider?
No. The worst possible thing is that we should ourselves be seen.
It's hopeless, Holmes. He could be anywhere. It's my fault. I ought to have stopped him coming here. It's just that he seems so... What? Did you hear it? Hear what?
There was something. In that direction, I think. Here, take this, Watson.
Hmm?
Careful. It's loaded. Unless things get desperate, I urge you to hold your fire.
But you?
I have one, too.
But whom are we to shoot at?
You will know the target when...
Is that somebody? God, help me.
You heard that, Watson?
Yes, a man's voice. You think it could be Sharpless?
Indeed, it could.
Mr. Sharpless? Mr. Sharpless, it's Sherlock Holmes. Mr. Sharpless?
Mr. Sharpless?
Mr. Sharpless?
Mr. Holmes! For pity's sake! The horror!
Over here! Over here! Fast as you can, Watson! But watch out!
Please! Please! Mr. Holmes, help me!
Stop! Confound it!
Watson?
I've smashed the lantern and...
Can you get out?
My shin. Yes, yes, I think so.
Come then. We shall have to find our way without light.
Please! Help me, Holmes! Mr. Holmes, help me!
Sharpless. You see? Just across the clearing.
It's so dark, but yes, I see him. On his face, under that huge tree stump.
Yes, except that is not a tree stump, my friend.
What? Good heavens! A monster.
A monster indeed. According to Professor Pfeiffer, who examined those hairs for me, a Canadian grizzly bear. 8 feet of it, standing on his back legs.
Say when to shoot.
No, not unless it attacks Sharpless. But I think actually it is waiting for orders.
The animal?
Yes, there is something even more deadly in this forest than it. Coming this way. Ready with your pistol, my friend.
Oh, Arcturus, you've cornered the coward. How does it feel to be hunted down, Mr. Sharpless?
Is it you? Did you do this?
It's not my revenge, Mr. Sharpless. It's his. He was a victim of human bloodlust, too.
And what about this, Miss Agnew? Is not this bloodlust?
Who's that?
Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yes, Sherlock Holmes. Well, I'd better tell you, Mr. Holmes, he has your scent, too.
I'm sure he does. You gave it to him yourself on those triangles of cloth you snipped from our topcoats in your library today.
That's right, sir. And now he's got your smell, he's very angry with you, I warn you.
And I warn you, Miss Agnew, both I and Dr. Watson are armed.
I doubt it, Mr. Holmes.
No, don't shoot the animal. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Indeed, no one can blame a bear for being wild. Especially one which has been excited into a frenzy.
One word from me and he will tear apart that man like a stuffed toy.
You are the true savage here, Miss Agnew, not that beast.
And what about the men who set dog against dog? What about those who whipped and branded this creature here? What about the villains who stole my Dodger and watched while another dog ripped his throat out?
I have no more love for such men than you do, but to set a wild beast upon a man is murder. Now, if you wish to save this creature's life, I suggest you shackle it at once. I presume it will do your bidding.
It will. And if I tell it to kill...
Hear me, Miss Agnew. Both Dr. Watson and I are crack shots. And even in the dark, I am confident we would finish it before it did Mr. Sharpless any damage.
Arcturus! Please! Mr. Holmes! Don't provoke it!
Miss Agnew, make your choice. Shackle it, or I shoot.
Curse you, Mr. Holmes. Arcturus! Come to me! Come here!
Good. Now, may I suggest we get this animal back to its cage? And you, Miss Agnew, I fear, to yours.
Well, thank God you came. It would have torn me limb from limb. Another brandy, Doctor.
Very kind. Suddenly cold out there tonight.
It's a relief to be home, all right. But tell me, Mr. Holmes, how did Miss Agnew go about selecting her victims?
Felicity Agnew's vendetta was against anyone who attended those so-called sporting occasions where animals are set to fight one another. Dogfights, bear baitings, and the like. But such occasions are shrouded in secrecy. So how was she, a respectable woman, to trace such men? Well, she began to assemble in her library a set of books dealing with the very sport she detested. Whenever a reader requested such a book, she would insert into it, as it was issued, an invitation to attend some fictional spectacle of animal combat on that very night.
That piece of paper I found in the book, Dr. Watson, which made me leave so hastily, was an invitation to attend what it called a sensational sporting event in Hanging Wood. I came because I thought... I'm afraid... that I could solve this case on my own and win your respect, Mr. Holmes. Instead, I was nearly done for.
But those triangles of cloth she cut from our coats to arouse the bear to anger at our scent, surely she didn't cut the coat of every one of her customers.
She had no need to. Only those like us who showed an interest in books in the blood sports section. It was when she saw us pick up that book that she took her scissors to our coat linings. And had we gone on and borrowed the book, we would have found, as Mr. Sharpless did, an invitation between its pages. Even then, of course, we would only have been in danger had we accepted the invitation to Hanging Wood. It was an ingenious way to pinpoint only those who would actually attend blood sport meetings.
She must have spent many an evening on that windy heath waiting vainly for victims.
Certainly. Hence those local rumours of the growling horrors. The bear got restless. The poor creature had been treated cruelly in its early years, as you saw from those scars it bore. Perhaps Miss Agnew had some softness in her to care so much for those beasts.
But to go out like that, looking for people to kill, it's so dreadful.
Indeed, but that a person's only friend in the world should be a dumb animal, that is perhaps a little dreadful too.
Within a year, Miss Felicity Agnew had kept her appointment with justice, and I believe the bear was trundled off to some zoo to live out its days, leaving Hanging Wood a quieter place, though, legends being legends, they still talk in Charlton Village of the old horror. Mr. Sharpless, however, who wrote to me a few years after the incident, by then a married man and a father, told me he had come to think of the wood as a most agreeable place, where pigeons cooed and bluebells flowered and children played gaily, fearless of anything more sinister than a grey squirrel or a fat bumblebee.
The horror in Hanging Wood, you heard Simon Callow as Sherlock Holmes and Nicky Henson as Dr. Watson. Martin Sharpless was played by John Webb, Felicity Agnew by Geraldine Fitzgerald, Inspector Lestrade by Keith Drinkle, and Constable Chaplin by John Fleming. The unopened casebook of Sherlock Holmes is written by John Taylor and directed by Peter Hutchings.
And Sherlock Holmes will be back here on Radio 5 next Sunday morning, but at the slightly earlier time of 9:30.